It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The impacts of the shooting of Renee Macklin Good by an ICE agent in Minneapolis are still rippling through the U.S., and we're getting two responses from here in Wisconsin.
After the fatal shooting, which was caught on video, the Trump administration claimed that the agent was acting in self-defense and said that Good was weaponizing her vehicle and committing an act of domestic terrorism.
Many other observers say Good was attempting to drive away, that the agent was not in immediate danger, and that shooting Good at close range was unjustified and against standard policy. ICE leaders say they will not investigate the agent.
Later, we'll hear from a victim's rights advocate who helped shape how law enforcement shootings are investigated in Wisconsin.
First, a former Wisconsin police chief joins us to talk about accountability for law enforcement and what he wants to see from citizens and police departments when ICE is present in their community. David Cooper served as Madison police chief from 1972 to 1993. Since his retirement, he has become an Episcopal priest and a police reform advocate. David, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
My pleasure.
David, we've talked in the past a little bit about your work reviewing incidents of police shootings, including looking at video with this shooting, an ICE agent shooting Renee Nicole Good. In these videos, what stands out to you? How do you evaluate this?
Well, that's something that we started working on at least 40 years ago, and that is about those dangerous situations about officers being dragged by cars or standing in the way of cars. And we basically said these are not shooting situations. Primarily was you are not to put your body in front of a car to try to stop a motor vehicle and then consider that to be life-threatening and shoot somebody. So I think modern police, progressive police, probably would look at that, though they may not want to criticize another person in a situation like that. Simply, it was a bad shoot. She should not have been shot, period. And no matter what the president says, no matter what the vice president says, no matter what was the Secretary of Criminal Justice says, nor Homeland Security, it was a bad shoot in the state of Minnesota. As best I can read the law, I'm not a lawyer, but I know that there are case studies that show that when a federal officer has a great amount of immunity, but when he or she steps out of the scope of their employment, that is, use unreasonable force or breaks the law in other ways, they can be charged and prosecuted by the state in which the offense occurred. And I think that's what's going to go on in Minnesota right now.
We saw in some of the early response from the Trump administration statements saying that the officer followed his training in this instance. You question that, it sounds like.
Well, they better review their training if the officer followed training on this, because that is not what police in a free society do. Maybe you can get by with that in a autocratic state where you're not to be questioned. But this is a free society. We've got rules. Those federal officers should abide by the same kind of rules that professional local police do. This is the exact opposite of what happened in the 1960s. 1960s, we had local police abusing citizens of their city, and the federal government had to step in. Now it's the other way. We've got the federal government going into cities abusing people who live there, and the local police need to do something. Who else will protect people? Who else can you expect to protect you if you are dragged out of your car and beaten up for no reason whatsoever? Who protects you? A masked, unidentifiable federal agent or your local police? And that's where the rub's going to come. And it's going to come hard, I think. And police in the country, their leaders are going to have to stand up and say, not in my city.
You've written on your blog recently about the need for police departments to have policies to prepare for situations like this here in Wisconsin. If a current police chief or city council member were to call you up, what would you suggest when it comes to setting up policies on dealing with federal immigration enforcement officers?
Sure. And what I've been trying to ask local police to do is to step up. And in many cases, they say that, well, that we don't, our immigrant community doesn't want us to speak out because they're afraid. Well, I respect that, but this is time that people have to stand up who have the badges. And I would tell them that they must refuse to, first of all, refuse to participate in federal immigration enforcement. It is not criminal law. We're talking about civil law here. These are not crimes. But if they have someone who is dangerous, then by all means, we'll cooperate and take that person in. But we know the big lie out there. These are not all murderers, rapists, and drug dealers. Only 7% of people being arrested by ICE are dangerous people. Secondly, is that they should intervene when federal agents violate the law. And this, I get a lot of pushback on this. I'm saying, okay, maybe we don't want to get a physical intervention, but local police, you know, must be able to report and document and identify everybody who's involved in this, the ICE agent, the person being abused, and be able to present that to the county attorney or to the state Department of Criminal Justice. Things have to be accountable. And local police have to stand up right now and say, hey, we're here to protect every resident in our jurisdiction, regardless of immigration status. The Constitution does not say citizen. The Constitution says persons. And all persons are to be treated justly in this country, regardless of their immigration status. I mean, that's just simple, basic decency. This isn't a matter of politics. It's a matter of decency and about legality.
The Department of Homeland Security recently posted a message to agents written by Stephen Miller, a Trump advisor, saying, in effect, you have federal immunity. Local officials who interfere with your actions could be subject to federal felony prosecutions. That sounds, I would think that would be scary to local law enforcement to say, hey, if I do intervene in this situation in any way, this is going to turn federal authorities against me.
Absolutely. That's the way the game is played. You know, that's one of the first pages of the Autocrat's Handbook. Get people afraid. Speak badly of them. Call them names. Yeah, that's a scary statement. But I think they're wrong. And I think any local county attorney in our state should be able to answer to that. That's not true. But what they ought to, at a minimum, is to be able to record visually what's going on, try to identify the agents which are doing this and who the subjects are. I mean, what would be wrong with that? I mean, unless you're working outside the law.
I want to ask more widely about what you see in the tone, the tactics being used by ICE when they go into a city, and the scale, the scope. There were 2,000, now being upped apparently to 3,000 ICE agents in Minnesota. They are by far the largest law enforcement presence in Minnesota right now. Your general thoughts on what we're seeing from ICE and how they're approaching this?
Yeah, it's terrible. That's right. There are more federal agents in Minneapolis than there are police officers. And that certainly puts police at a tremendous disadvantage. So what is it that we're talking about here? This some type of federal local policing now? I mean, this is the kind of thing that we as a republic have been against since our very origins, of not having, you know, there's no such thing as the king's police coming into our city. No, we are a local republic. You know, we are elected people. We all operate under a rule of law, not on the rule or the perchances of certain government officials. No, the law is the law. And that's been our mantra since our early stages of our development in this country. And the kind of thing that we have been trying to work for years to improve policing. And I think we've done a pretty good job over the last 50 years. We're not perfect, but we're doing a heck of a lot better. We've got smarter police, more educated police, better trained police than we've ever had before.
David, for people listening thinking, gosh, what do I do if people, masked people, come up, identify themselves as ICE agents, order me to show ID or leave a scene or otherwise comply with their orders? Do you have advice for them?
Yeah, I've been working with some groups here in Madison. We've been looking at what we've learned over the last century or so about nonviolent resistance. That will work. It's difficult. We have to comply. They will hurt us. We've seen that before. You stop the car, if you don't open the doors, they'll break the window and drag you out the window. They'll throw you on the ground, they'll handcuff you, they'll detain you, they'll take you down to some place, and you may get out a couple of days later. That is uncontrolled, the word is fascism. It's uncontrolled and it's scary. The only thing that I've advised people is that we have to go back to 1960 and the Woolworth counters in the South, when trained young black men and women went into Woolworth and said, "You can't be in here because of the color of your skin," and they sat down and people spat on them. They carried them away. They didn't resist. They didn't do anything but be there. I think it's going to involve a nationwide movement of non-resistance that we will absolutely flood with people's bodies, ICE's attempts to improperly treat people and take them into custody. And it's going to be tough.
Finally, David, a response I've seen online is along the lines of, hey, if you don't want to be hurt by law enforcement at any level, comply with their orders, cooperate, do what they say. And if you don't, then you may be responsible for the consequences. We've talked about the idea of compliance policing before. What is your answer to that line of thought?
That's a very simple look at the situation. We still have a constitution. We still have an inalienable right in this country to peaceably assemble and petition the government for grievances. And the government should not punish us for doing that. And that's what's going on right now. It's simply not fair. I don't think it's legal. And I think it's highly, highly wrong.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right, Rob. We shall overcome. It ain't going to be easy.
That was David Cooper. He served as Madison police chief from 1972 to 1993. After his retirement from police work, he became an Episcopal priest and an advocate for police reform. Now for a look at how use of force incidents are reviewed in law enforcement and how it could be applied to federal agents, we're joined by Michael Bell Sr., a victims' rights advocate, former Air Force pilot originally from Kenosha. His son was killed by a Kenosha police officer in 2004. He helped Wisconsin become the first U.S. state to legally mandate an outside investigation when an officer uses lethal force. Michael, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you, Rob, for having me on the show.
Michael, you, in a lot of ways, led the movement to get Wisconsin's independent investigation law for police shootings. In an act, use of force by police, what are the hallmarks of a thorough and fair investigation?
Well, the hallmark is don't rush to judgment. Make sure that you have all the facts before you come up with a synopsis of what occurred, and do a thorough fact check and be fair for all sides. And the laws that I had helped get passed in Wisconsin take the investigation out of the department themselves and allow other law enforcement agencies to conduct any investigation.
Now, the shooting of Renee Good in Minneapolis is a little different from other situations in that ICE is a federal agency. They're not a municipal or state law enforcement agency. As you look at the response you've seen so far, what stands out to you about the federal authorities' response here?
I'm appalled by a number of things. You know, there's a lot of situations that are very similar to my own son's case. I mean, family members watched another family member die. There was a rush to judgment. I mean, Kristi Noem essentially was saying it was domestic terrorism within about 2 hours after the incident occurred. And that rush to judgment occurred in my own son's case. Within 48 hours, they said that it was justified. And ended up getting that agency, the Kenosha Police Department, into trouble. And I got a hunch that this is going to get Kristi Noem into trouble at some point in the future, too.
And a key part of Wisconsin law is, as you said, the agency involved in the use of force is not the agency that investigates it. What would you like to see happen here in Minneapolis and the Renee Good shooting? Who would be the appropriate agency to investigate this?
Well, I have been fighting for a National Transportation Safety Board style investigation for all these types of tragedies. It will help law enforcement and it'll also help citizens that were killed. That's what I think needs to occur here. Take a look at all the facts. Who was hired? What was the training involved? Look at all the different camera angles and then come up with a synopsis of what happened and then come up with a detailed plan to how to prevent it from happening again. I think that's the the greatest scenario that could occur here, but I don't think our country is ready for it. We're probably about 15 years, 20 years away from that.
A key point of what you advocated for, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was even if we do this investigation and decide, yes, this was a justified use of force, this is still something we'd like to avoid, and can we learn lessons to intervene and make this not happen, even if we do feel it was justified? Do I have that right?
You have it perfectly right. I mean, we don't want to see anybody die. We don't want to see the officer suffer. I mean, I assure you that this Jonathan Ross is going to suffer. I mean, his family is suffering right now. But then again, take a look at Renee Good's family. You know, they saw the shooting, and then the family members are going to see it replayed over and over again on all the different camera angles. And so getting this right is so important for everybody.
The investigation, we're getting hints so far, our colleagues at Minnesota Public Radio report that federal prosecutors have resigned in Minneapolis, reporting that that's in part because of pressure from the Trump administration to pursue an investigation, not of the officer, but of the widow of Good. Do you have any hope that an actual investigation could happen, could come from the federal government at this point?
I do not, but I want to tell you that there's agencies such as ICE and police departments that aren't ultra professional. They have the same MO. It's a foot race to get out their version of the story first. So you imagine a family suffering like, hey, Renee just got killed and I'm calling and I'm grieving and everything else. But on the other side, they're coming up with a synopsis for law enforcement. The second thing they do is they look for any way to assassinate the character of the person that was killed. If there was alcohol in the bloodstream, if there was drugs in the bloodstream, if there was a criminal record, they look for every possible thing to make the public think that this person was a bad person and they deserve to be shot. And so these types of things are happening all the time, and we need to avoid it.
What do you say to members of the public who see something like this and may quickly come to a conclusion of their own part, maybe to match a partisan narrative? What do you say to people to not rush to judgment, to wait for further investigations when we may want to react very quickly?
What I would like to say is this, it should be just like the National Transportation Safety Board. We should have a review board that looks at all the facts, all the training, who was hired, how much they got paid, was there drugs? And I mean, nobody tested Jonathan Ross's bloodstream to see if there was drugs in there. How do we know that he's not on steroid? How do we know that he was on binge drinking the night before? We need an investigation that looks at all those factors. And then, like the NTSB, issue a preliminary report within 30 days, like these are the findings of fact so far. And typically within 12 to 24 months after that, then the NTSB comes up with a final report. And it talks about how to prevent future occurrences, how not to assign blame. And they take this methodical approach. And that's what needs to happen with this type of shooting.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Michael Bell Sr. is a victims' rights advocate and former Air Force pilot originally from Kenosha. His son was killed by a Kenosha police officer in 2004, and he helped Wisconsin become the first state to require an outside investigation when an officer uses lethal force. Earlier, we heard from David Cooper, former Madison police chief, Episcopal priest, and police reform advocate. They joined us with their perspectives on the shooting of Renee Good by a federal agent in Minneapolis.